Chapter 10. The Spy. Twigleg looked back uneasily as the raven took off from the ruined castle walls and rose into the sky. The little homunculus had only ever left the castle when Nettlebrand's hunting instincts took him down to the valleys to prey on sheep and cows. And even then, they traveled by way of underground passages, for Nettlebrand was a flightless dragon, whose heavy golden armor would have made it impossible for him to rise from the ground. Instead, he swam along underground rivers deep beneath the earth. And if he came up to the surface, it was only at night, under cover of darkness. But now the sun, high in the sky, was bright and hot, and Twigleg had only a raven for company.
"Is it much farther?"
he asked, trying not to look down.
"It's the mountain, over there!"
croaked the raven, streaking like an arrow toward it.
"The one with the stump-shaped peak!"
"Do you have to fly so fast?"
Twigleg dug his thin fingers into the raven's feathers.
"This wind's almost blowing my ears off."
"I thought we were in a hurry,"
replied the raven without slowing down.
"You're not half as heavy as a dwarf, even though you're not much smaller. What are you made of? Air?"
"Good guess."
Twigleg was shifting uncomfortably back and forth.
"Air and a few other choice ingredients, but the recipe's lost."
He peered ahead.
"There! There's something shining in the grass!"
he exclaimed suddenly.
"Oh, sacred salamanders!"
His eyes opened very wide.
"That stupid dwarf was right! It is a dragon!"
The raven circled over Firedrake, where he lay coiled up among the rocks. A few feet away from him, Ben and Sora were bending over the map with the three mountain dwarfs standing beside them.
"Let's land on that rocky ledge,"
Twigleg whispered to the raven,
"just above their heads, where we can eavesdrop on them."
When the raven landed on the ledge, Sorrel looked up suspiciously.
"Fly away now,"
Twigleg whispered to the bird.
"Hide in that fir tree until I give you a signal. The brownie won't notice me, but you seem to worry her."
The raven rose in the air again and disappeared among the dark fir branches. Twigleg cautiously moved right out on the ledge.
"Okay, I'll admit it," the brownie was saying. "So we did lose our way a bit, but it doesn't really matter. We'll reach the sea tonight all the same."
"The only question is, which sea, Sorrel?" said the human. He was only a small human, still a boy.
"You know something, Clever Cloaks?" hissed the brownie girl. "You can do the steering tonight. Then at least I won't have to put up with your sniping if we go the wrong way again."
"Where are you going anyway?"
asked one of the dwarves. Twigleg pricked up his ears. "We're looking for the rim of heaven," said Ben. Sorrel gave him such a hefty nudge in the ribs that he almost fell over.
"Who said you could tell any old chance-met dwarf that, eh?"
The boy became very quiet. Twigleg moved a little farther forward. The rim of heaven. What on earth could that be?
"He's waking up,"
one of the dwarfs announced suddenly.
"Look, look, he's waking up."
Twigleg turned his head, and there he stood, the silver dragon. He was much smaller than Nettlebrand, and his eyes were not red, but golden. The dragon stretched his beautiful limbs, yawned, and then looked in surprise at the three little creatures hiding behind the human boy. "Dwarves," he said, in a voice of the faint rasp that sounded like the lick of a cat's tongue. "Mountain dwarves." The boy laughed. "Yes, they absolutely had to meet you," he said, urging the dwarves to venture out from behind him. "This is Stonebeard, this is Granite Face, this is Lead and Gleam, and this is, Ben looked around in surprise. "Where's the fourth of you? I don't know his name."
"Gravelbeard," said Stonebeard, looking up at the dragon in awe. "I've no idea where he is. Gravelbeard's a little, he's a little peculiar."
Up on the ledge, Twigleg could hardly keep from chuckling.
"Gravelbeard's an idiot," he whispered. "Right now, he's hard at work cleaning Nettlebrand's armor."
A pebble came loose as the mannequin moved even closer to the rocky edge. The wretched stone fell right on the brownie's head. She looked up suspiciously, but Twigleg had hastily withdrawn his long nose. "These dwarves think you can pick up the scent of treasure, Firedrake," said the boy. "They want you to try doing it on their mountain."
"Treasure?" The dragon shook his head. "What kind of treasure? You mean gold and silver?" The dwarves nodded. They looked hopefully at the dragon.
Firedrake went over to the mountainside and put his nose against the rocks, drawing in the scent of them. The dwarves crowded excitedly around his legs.
"Well, it smells good," said the dragon. "Different from the mountains I come from, but good. Yeah, it really does. But with the best will in the world, I can't tell you exactly what it smells of."
The dwarves looked at one another, disappointed.
"Are there more dragons where you come from?" asked Granite Face curiously.
"I'd like to know that too," whispered Twigleg up in his lookout post.
"Oh, yes," replied the dragon. "And where I'm going as well, I hope."
"That's enough of that," said the brownie girl.
Just when things were getting interesting, Twigleg felt like spitting on her head. She parked herself between the dwarves and the dragon and shooed the little people back.
"You heard what Firedrake said. He doesn't know whether there's any treasure in the mountains, so fetch your hammers and pickaxes and go and find it for yourselves. Firedrake has to rest again now. We still have a long way to go."
And that was it. Over the next few hours, Sorrel ensured that Twigleg heard nothing else of interest. Instead, the dwarves told Firedrake stories of the good old days when their grandparents used to ride on dragonback, and Stonebeard gave the dragon an endless lecture on quartz and silver ore. It was infuriating. Twigleg was yawning so hard he almost fell off the ledge.